It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano. Well, just kidding this morning. It's going to be me, Angela Purcell, hosting for Nick, who is actually out of the community today on some other work. But we are thrilled to have the opportunity to host Good Health, brought to you by Good Shepherd. And want to welcome into the program this morning, Dr. Havkin from Good Shepherd. Good morning to you. We should let people know that Dr. Havkin, if you haven't had the opportunity to meet her yet, comes to us from Buffalo, New York, where she finished her training and is an OBGYN in our community. So tell us a little bit about where you went to school and your background.
Sure. I actually grew up just outside of Vancouver, Canada, which is what brought me back out west after being in Buffalo. I did my 4 years of OBGYN residency training there. Very cold winters, very snowy.
Yes.
But it's very nice to come back out west where it is definitely a lot sunnier here than I was used to growing up out on the coast.
Well, wonderful. And we're certainly glad to have you here. What really drew you to Hermiston when you were making a decision? And you certainly had lots of choices of where you could go.
Right. So definitely a big part of it was coming back out west. I was looking for somewhere a little more rural, as I did grow up more in horse country. It's a lot more my speed. And, you know, growing up on the coast, there's a lot of rain, so mm-hmm. I was looking forward to a little bit nicer weather, especially in the summer. I know it gets very hot here, but I like it hot.
Okay, good. Then you're going to like it here. It is, but we definitely have four seasons here, mm-hmm. so that's a really nice thing. In talking with you previously and in talking with Nick ahead of time preparing for the show, we were talking a little bit about your holistic approach to medicine. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I try not to just categorize people by, you know, what is going on with their health. I try to look also at, you know, mental health, their family, their social issues, because a lot of that does affect their health, which they are coming to me for. So, you know, I do try to get, if the family can come together, that's great, because then that way, you know, if I am trying to get someone to maybe work on their weight or their diet, it's easier if everyone is doing it at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Before we jump into questions today, I want to remind our audience that at Good Health, you have an opportunity to ask questions that you might like addressed on the show that I might not have thought to ask this morning. So please give us a call anytime. Call Misty at the front office, 567-6500, and go ahead and ask your question. She'll get that back here to us. So if you're missing something today and you'd like to have the opportunity to ask Dr. Havkin, we'd like to take care of that for you today. So let's start off with when a woman should start seeing her gynecologist.
I know a lot of people do come in and they're worried about a pelvic exam, but we don't always have to do one. So, you know, if you have a daughter, say, you know, she's a teenager, she's worried about acne, or, you know, I don't know if you'd be talking about her, about sex with her, but if she's thinking about maybe becoming sexually active, that would be a great time to come in to see a gynecologist. Maybe, you know, learn about contraception, learn about ways to prevent STDs. That would be ideal. And of course, we always like to have the children from the age of 11 get their HPV vaccine, because that does prevent cervical cancer for women, but also oral and pharyngeal cancers for men and women, and penile cancers as well. So it's really beneficial to try and get vaccines at least on board very early.
And with the HPV vaccine, age is imperative when you start getting that shot, is that correct?
Correct. It's best to get that on board before they're sexually active and exposed to HPV, because over 80% of people who are sexually active at some point in their life will get HPV of some strain.
And how new is the vaccine now? It's been around a little bit.
It's been out for a while. They've actually come out now with a vaccine that covers even more of the subtypes of the virus. So it just gets better and better with time. It's been out, I think, for over 10 years. But and we're seeing the benefits of it now that we're able to space out how often we have to do pap smears for the patients who have already gotten the vaccine.
Are there any drawbacks to the vaccine?
There's always those risks with any vaccination. Some people may have a hypersensitivity to it, but most patients just complain of the actual localized pain. You know, you're obviously going to be a little sore because it's going to be going into a muscle, but that's usually the extent of what kind of complications can occur. Of course, we've always heard there are those outlier stories that, you know, people get very sick, people may die, but that's a risk that you take with every vaccine. So you really do have to know how you've reacted in the past to other vaccines.
All right, excellent information. Okay, how important are regular visits then with our OBGYN? Once we've started and we're doing that, is it a yearly exam? Is it every few years?
It would be best to at least see us once a year. That, you know, we would love you to see us as well as to see your primary care doctor, your family care doctor, because they do cover a lot more outside of just the scope of OBGYN. Of course, I know there are many OBGYNs who have been around for many years who do act as more of a primary care doctor, and they can do, you know, your general physical exam. We do a physical exam that's a little more, you know, focused more on the breasts and more on the lady parts. So, but that's more because that's what we're comfortable with and that's what we'd be trained to do. So I would love to see my patients at least once a year. And of course, if there's a problem, I do see them more often than just that.
Does it change as we age? Lots of things change as we age, isn't there? But is there a time in which we no longer need to visit the gynecologist, or we can go longer in between visits?
I wouldn't say that I would want you going more than a year in between visits. A lot can change in a year, not just, you know, physical health, but other things as well. And we do like to try and cover that and make sure that, you know, maybe your health at this point is okay, but another part of your life, it's always good to maybe get another listening ear. And, you know, many people don't think of coming to their doctor for their other problems. But as you age, you might actually end up seeing us more often because more people end up being on medications that we need to follow them for. So I would actually say as you age, it's more imperative to see your doctor more often.
All right. What are the important screenings that are specific to women that we should be having regularly?
Right. So definitely having things like a breast exam done. We have been kind of getting away from saying that women themselves need to be doing self-breast exams, just because I know a lot of women may feel a lump at a different time of the month, and they can get really worried that it might be a lump. And of course, I really do like my patients to be checking their breasts, because it's just another way that we can pick it up if it is there. Of course, you know, it many times is going to be benign, nothing like a cancer that we need to worry about. But I'd prefer if my patients were checking their breasts, then come in and I can do a breast exam. And if need be, I can always send you in for, say, an ultrasound or even a mammography. Another thing that women should be getting screenings for would be definitely sexually transmitted diseases or infections. Bacterial vaginosis and yeast infections are very common. That's probably what I see most in my day-to-day. And of course, abnormal bleeding. If your periods are off, that's something that you should get checked out. It can tell us a lot about your health if your periods are abnormal, have changed recently. And then, of course, pap smears and screening for HPV vaccine, which is usually the precursor to any cervical cancers. Pap smears only are screening for cervical cancer. That's about all we can check for at this point. Every now and then we may pick up some abnormal cells coming from above in the uterus. But unfortunately, there's not much we can do to screen for things like ovarian cancer at this point. And then, of course, another thing that we try to screen for is intimate partner violence. It's something that a lot of women are, you know, going through, and for some reason they just don't come out and talk with someone, especially, you know, your GYN provider. That's a very special, personal time for yourself to come in and really talk to someone who's listening to you and wants the best for you.
And it's a really safe environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, you can always choose not to have anyone else in the room with you when you are coming in for these exams. It's never, you know, something where you have to bring someone with you.
Is the pap smear the thing that you think keeps a lot of women from making the appointment?
I feel like that's definitely a part of it. They may have a fear or a worry or even be embarrassed about, you know, seeing or someone else seeing their private areas. And really, that's our specialty. That's what we're there to do. We've seen a lot. We see a lot every day. You know, everyone is different, and that's normal. So I feel, you know, if that is something that you're concerned about, you know, you don't have to see a male provider if that's a big part of it. Many OBGYNs these days are female, which I think makes it a lot easier, especially maybe for the younger generation.
And when you think about also the peace of mind that you're going to get, because you do, you get a notification that everything's good, and you just know, okay, everything is safe in terms of cervical cancer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And many cervical cancers, I mean, there are definitely ones that are aggressive, but many take about 10 years to really develop. So, you know, if you're coming in and you're seeing your gynecologist every year, there's really no way for you to have cervical cancer down the line if you're getting the proper screening.
Excellent. All right, let's get to the big question here. Why is PMS so bad for some women? It's worse for some women. It's a real thing, right?
Yes.
We're not making this up, gentlemen, if you're still listening.
So, yes, you know, PMS, it is definitely very common. I would say about, you know, 75% of women with regular cycles can definitely have some of the symptoms of PMS. They're physical or even behavioral symptoms that can be just during the 2 weeks leading up to the period. And usually all those symptoms should go away within the first few days of starting the period. And it is a cycle. So this will happen every month that the woman is having a cycle.
Sorry about the face.
Yes. but it really does have to be severe enough that it's interfering with the woman's life in some way for it to really be causing, you know, problems. That's the PMS. So
So what are some ways to combat that and just to make life a little more enjoyable?
Absolutely. Regular exercise is actually the best way. If you're, you know, regularly exercising, you're probably reducing the amount of stress in your life because all of those things will lead to PMS. It'll make you more touchy, a lot more, you know, probably going to snap at people a little bit easier. But also there are other options. There's things like similar medications to what we put patients for depression on. They tend to work a lot more quickly in women who are having severe PMS. And then we can also put patients on oral contraceptive pills just to sort of regulate their cycles a little bit more, hopefully prevent these massive swings in the hormones every month as well. Keeps everything a little more even keeled.
And do you suggest an over-the-counter medication if it's not terribly severe? Do you think the over-the-counter medications do much to help with those symptoms?
Probably not so much. I mean, it might be a good place to start if you're wanting to try something before maybe going in to see your doctor. But, you know, if you're not getting results within a cycle or two, I would definitely come in and get checked out.
It's not something that you just have to live with forever.
Oh, no. There are most things in life you don't have to just live with. There's always someone out there to help you with them.
Excellent. If you're just joining us, it's 818 on AM 1360 KOHU, and this is Good Health, brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System, and we certainly appreciate all that they do for us in our community. And one of them is bringing us great doctors like Dr. Havkin, OBGYN at the hospital. And we are talking about women's health issues this morning. And since you just mentioned birth control, let's talk about that, the safety of birth control in your childbearing years, and what are some different options?
Sure. So for the most part, all the options are relatively safe. Otherwise, we wouldn't have them out in this out there and available to our patients. But there are many options depending on, you know, your day-to-day, what you think you'd be able to manage. You know, definitely everyone knows the pill. It's been out for decades and decades, and it's definitely changed the way that us women live our lives. But the downside is you do have to take a pill every day. And if you can't stick to that kind of schedule, and we do try to have you take it at the same time every day, then obviously it won't work if you're not taking it. So I usually tell my patients, if you're going to take the pill, try to maybe set an alarm on your phone. So then that way something else is trying to help you stick to it. But there are many other options. There's even the ring, which can be left in the vagina. You switch it out once a month, kind of a thing. It's a little bit easier to remember. There's also the patch you can place. Of course, all of those combination sort of hormonal ways, there's always the risks involved as well. Blood clots are the big one that we think of, especially if you're a smoker and you're over 35. Probably not the best idea to be on a combination kind of pill. It can increase your risk in that case. But you also have to look at, you know, what other medical issues the patient has at baseline, because there's definitely medical issues that you may want to be aware of before, you know, starting someone on a birth control pill. And in those ways, I usually like to start a patient with an intrauterine device. That is one of the most effective ways for birth control. It is placed in the uterus, but it's done in the office. It's like an extended pap smear is what I tell my patient. Unfortunately, it was a little uncomfortable. You will get some cramping. The cervix doesn't like it when you put anything through it, but it's a wonderful option. There is hormonal as well as no hormone options. The hormonal ones, many women use it for very heavy bleeding. It can really help you have lighter periods or no periods at all. Or the non-hormone one is a very good option as well. I know many women like that because they feel they're very sensitive to hormones. And in this way, at least they get the benefit of having the intrauterine device where you don't need to think about it. Once it's in for anywhere between 3 to 10 years, depending on the type.
Oh, wow. Kind of takes care of it for a long time.
Absolutely.
You mentioned mammograms earlier. Mm-hmm. When should a woman start getting a mammogram, and then how often? There just seems like there's differing news reports all the time.
Oh, yes. And it really depends on, you know, which group you're listening to. Personally, as an OBGYN, I listen to the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. So they have their own guidelines. And by those ones, we do start general screening at 40. And we do it every year thereafter. We do have other guidelines as well. Other groups do say, you know, starting at 50, maybe doing it every 2 years. But I think a lot of it depends on, you know, talking with your doctor, figuring out with your personal and family history of breast cancers or other GYN cancers when it might be best to start for you. Because if you do have, say, your own mother and she had been diagnosed with breast cancer at, say, 40, you know, you'd want to start screening 10 years earlier than that to hopefully catch anything in yourself. But now we also do have a lot with genetic testing for BRCA genes, which, you know, with Angelina Jolie, it was very big in the news. You know, you can get a lot more information outside of mammogram screening as well. But for most of my patients, starting at 40 and doing it every year, it gives me peace of mind and them peace of mind as well.
And is there any danger or drawback to having a mammogram every year?
You know, the biggest thing I would say is, you know, you're not getting exposed to too much radiation. It's much like getting an X-ray. It's very low density amount of radiation. But the biggest issue we have with over-screening, I would say, is maybe coming up with false positives where you're thinking that it may be a cancer, and then the patient goes through a massive workup, which is usually very invasive, needles, you know, getting tissue samples. And some patients even all the way getting down the line and being treated with surgery, chemo, and radiation. And then, you know, and it ends up that they didn't really have a breast cancer. They just had a mass that looked scary. So I feel that's probably the biggest risk is that you get over-treated. But I guess it depends on how you see it. You know, if you would prefer to be on the safe side of things and definitely make sure that, you know, it's not cancer, I guess then that can kind of be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm not sure if everybody knows, I hope that they do, is that Good Shepherd now offers 3D mammography,
yeah.
which is a really big deal for women.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you do have those dense breast tissue, which some women do have. Usually it's more in the younger women, but as you age, it usually gets a lot fattier, a lot easier to see if there is any abnormalities. But some women do have denser breast tissue, and in those cases, a 3D mammography would be beneficial.
Excellent. Okay, let's get into the topic of menopause. I mean, we've talked about PMS. Let's move over to menopause and what we should know about that. What age does that begin happening for most women, and what are the symptoms? What are we looking at?
Sure. So on average in the United States, our patients are around 51 when they go through the change. And menopause itself is actually, it takes time. It's one of these things where women think, okay, well, I'm not having periods anymore. I must be in menopause. You got to be outside of having periods for a full year. And then usually the symptoms that are associated with it are hot flashes and vaginal dryness. But those can start occurring before your periods stop, or you might not have them at all. So many times I try to talk to my patients about, you know, what is the most bothersome symptom? Is it, you know, hot flashes that are interfering with your sleep, which can then lead to many other things throughout your day, being disrupted, being chronically fatigued, and then all the personality things that go with being fatigued.
Why, whatever are you talking about, Dr. Hafkin? Okay, all right. It really affects everybody around you,
it
too,
really
when you
does.
Think about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, the vaginal dryness, that will usually lead to things like pain with intercourse, and that can really affect a couple's, you know, the way they connect. Mm-hmm. But there's ways to treat all of those things.
Right, so what? Yeah. There have to be ways to combat some of these effects, and I know hormone therapy is used sometimes.
Right.
What are the effects of those?
Sure.
Options.
So we have many options. I'll start with the hormone therapy, since that's what you brought up. But hormone therapy, it's one of these things that a lot of women were on, and then the WHI studies, the Women's Health Initiative, which followed nurses through decades, and they were kind of figuring out, you know, women who have been placed on hormone replacement versus not, and then the different types of estrogen or estrogen and progesterone, what kind of risk factors that these women have. It really is individualized if you're going to be on hormone therapy or not. You want to be thinking about, you know, the patient's prior medical health. Again, if there are risk factors with being on hormones similar to like the birth control pill. But for the most part, if we are using hormones, say for vaginal dryness, we try to just have it intravaginally. So then that way it's not a lot of systemic hormones that you're being exposed to. But of course, if you are having more of the hot flashes issue, then usually taking a pill of some sort can help with that. And that's usually a low dose of the hormones. We try to stay very low dose with the oral contraceptive pill. The doses that we're giving are much higher than what is normal in the body, and that's why it's having its effect. But with menopause, it's kind of the opposite. You're trying to replace the hormones that used to be there. So we just bring them back up to what the normal level used to be, which is much lower than the oral contraceptive pill.
So is there a point then at which the body re-regulates itself and these things aren't necessary any longer after you've made your way through menopause?
So, yeah, that's another thing that tends to come up a lot with my patients is, you know, I went through menopause decades ago. Why am I having hot flashes now? And as I said, you know, some women may not have any symptoms around the time they change or for, you know, the first few years after that. But some women do kind of get those symptoms later on. Or it may be the opposite. You know, they have all the symptoms at first. They kind of struggle through and then they kind of ease up. Unfortunately, there isn't really any way for us to predict what the individual patient will be going through. Much of it is genetic. So asking your mother or any siblings you have who have gone through menopause may be the best indicator of what to expect.
Okay. Thanks, Mom. Anyways, okay, so that is a good resource. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of healthcare issues, that's a good resource for us.
Oh,
what is our family experience?
Absolutely. And then there are other ways to kind of work through the symptoms other than going straight to hormone therapy. We do try other things, especially since a lot of women are obviously concerned about, you know, the side effects of being on a hormone replacement. You know, what is the possibility of me developing things like a breast cancer or other GYN cancers that may kind of feed off of the hormones that we're trying to just replace at a low baseline. So I do usually, you know, for things like hot flashes, lowering the room temperature to some, you know, another temperature that other people can also maybe handle, not super low, not, you know, winter outside. You know, using a fan, dressing in layers, those are all helpful, and avoiding triggers, because sometimes it can be spicy food, it can be the stress in your life that kind of causes your hot flashes to occur. And again, weight loss and exercise are very helpful to help reduce that. Things like vaginal dryness, you can use topical moisturizers and lubricants, and actually having intercourse or using a dilator can be beneficial as well. If you know, a patient is wanting to maybe use something outside of these sort of lifestyle modifications, we can also try, again, antidepressant medications are helpful for things like hot flashes, which many women don't know. So, you know, I've had patients come in and say, oh, you know, my hot flashes haven't really been that bad. I've been surprised. And I look at the medications they're on, and they're on a, you know, antidepressant.
Ah.
So, who knew? It's kind of helping keep away those pesky side effects of menopause. And then there are other medications. You know, I know that there's a new vaginal DHEA, which is sort of like a testosterone kind of a thing, which was just approved last month.
Wow, always something new
becoming
available.
Absolutely.
So having a good relationship with your OBGYN is really key in your healthcare here for women.
Yes, because in that way, you know, as soon as things start changing, you can be already in contact with your provider. And then that way you don't have to be, you know, struggling through these bothersome symptoms by yourself.
Excellent. It's 8:31. You're listening to AM 1360 KOHU. I'm Angela Purcell, filling in as host today for Nick Bayerano, who's out of town, on Good Health, brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Jennifer's running the board. She's looking at me like, you know, this is when you're supposed to end, but I just have a couple more questions, Jennifer. So don't shut off my mic yet, please. I do. There's just so much great information coming from Dr. Havkin today, and we so appreciate you being here. I'm curious, what are the some health issues that women most often ignore, thinking it's really not anything?
So my big one is irregular periods. A lot of women come in and they're like, oh, you know, I haven't had a period in like a year. And they're, you know, 20 or 30. And, you know, you should be having a monthly cycle. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. That's letting me know that, you know, most likely those patients do tend to get diagnosed with things like polycystic ovarian syndrome, PCOS. I know a lot of women have probably heard of that, or maybe not, but what that is just that the hormones in your body kind of get imbalanced. Usually your testosterone's higher than it should be, and many women don't know that estrogen gets converted into testosterone by your peripheral tissues. So although your ovaries may be, you know, putting out estrogens, once it kind of gets into the circulation of your body, if, you know, the rest of your body isn't very healthy, you're not exercising regularly, you're not keeping a healthy weight, your body can do abnormal things with those hormones. And so it can convert it out to testosterone, and then women come in with irregular periods, they've got hair growing in all sorts of new places that they never had it before. And a lot of the times they come in complaining of these things because they're trying to get pregnant. And it makes it almost impossible to become pregnant.
Mm. Let's talk a little bit about that part of your job and what it is that you do as working in OB. So what are some things that women should think about if they're in childbearing age and are thinking, you know, maybe this is something that we want to do now? What should they do to prep themselves?
Best thing you can do is the second you are thinking of becoming pregnant is to take a prenatal vitamin every day. Many women don't think that, you know, oh, we'll try for a couple months, then when I get pregnant, I'll take, you know, a vitamin. But many times you don't actually find out you're pregnant until you're, you know, into your second month. And much of the development of that growing embryo, which is going to be, you know, your baby when it gets bigger, has already developed, you know. So it's best to already be on the vitamins. So then that way, if there is any nutritional deficiencies in your diet, it's going to be covered by that vitamin. The most important things is folic acid. That'll help the spine and the head develop normally. And then, of course, iron, because it does suck a lot of the iron out of the mother.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And there's no problem with taking these vitamins. I mean, they're good for us anyways.
Oh, absolutely.
So starting them earlier is better.
Yes.
And then how early should a woman establish a care plan during her pregnancy?
So, you know, I think it's really good to kind of come in, you know, talking to, you know, your friends, your family members who have had children before, figure out what's worked best for them, what they've really liked. I know a lot of women these days are trying to have very natural births. I know home births are, you know, on the rise. As an OBGYN, I wouldn't suggest it, just because even though you may have a very healthy, normal pregnancy, bad things can happen in labor, and you never know when it'll happen. You know, I know I've had women come in and they've said, oh, you know, I had 5 normal deliveries. Maybe I'll try this one at home. You know, every pregnancy is different. Every labor is different. And when things go wrong, you only have minutes to fix it before either mom or baby is dead, unfortunately. So, you know, having a care plan, I would come in at your new OB visit and have a list of things that you'd like to discuss with your OBGYN. Many times we already have a, you know, introduction to pregnancy kind of a packet with a lot of information already, but this way, you know, at least you're having all your questions answered, things that are important to you.
How often do you deal with infertility issues for couples? Is that on the rise? Is it fairly common?
It's actually not super common. We say, you know, if you're normally healthy outside of pregnancy and both partners are healthy, 90% of couples should be able to conceive within a year if they are having regular intercourse at the right time of the month without any contraception. But, you know, you do have your 5 to 10% of couples who do struggle with it. And many times it's not the woman's fault every time, even though, you know, I think in our society we tend to blame the woman. Only about a third of the time it is. A third of the time it's the man's sperm. It's not working. It's not getting to where it needs to be, or it's not of good quality, or they just don't make any. Shooting blanks, as they say. But another third of the time, we have no idea why. And after thorough workup, we still don't know why. So, you know, there are things that your general OBGYN can do to kind of either work you up, try some ovulation induction agents if we think maybe you're just not making and releasing an egg every month. That would be more for your patients maybe with the PCOS that we were talking about before. But, you know, we do our workup, and if you still aren't pregnant, I'd say, you know, 3 to 6 months, depending on your age, we would like to usually send you to a specialist, like an IVF specialist. But, you know, if you're young and you're in your 20s, early 30s, we can definitely wait about a year before sending you to a specialist. But if you are 35 and over, we tend to get you there a little bit quicker because you are running out of egg time.
Egg time, absolutely. As we get ready to wrap up Good Health today, I wanted to ask you about seasonal affective disorder, especially as we're in the winter months now. It's dark so much of the day, so early. What is it, and what are some recommendations for treatment for women?
Yeah, so seasonal affective disorder, it tends to be related to decreasing amounts of sunlight and being exposed to it. Things you can do, I know people have bought, you know, certain lamps with a certain wavelength of light that can definitely improve their mood. That's usually only for a few minutes of the day that you need to be exposed to it. But getting outside as much as you can, staying physically active, and watching what you're eating, all of those things will definitely affect your mood.
There's a thread that's run through the program: eat well and exercise. It really helps with a lot of things, doesn't it?
It does. It really is simple. It comes down to exercise, maintaining a healthy weight, and definitely watching what you're eating, because you are what you eat.
And the good news is those are things that we each have control over. So if we really want to do it, we certainly can.
Absolutely. And it's all about making it a habit.
Excellent advice. Let's talk before we go about the Good Shepherd Women's Center, which is where you work, and there's some great doctors and staff there. So tell the audience a little bit about your facility.
Sure. Right now, there are 4 full-time obstetrician gynecologists who do work at our clinic. We are, you know, very inclusive. We all work together. We try to see all of our pregnant ladies, so then that way you'll be comfortable with each and every one of us, depending on, you know, whoever's going to show up on the day when you are in labor. We are actually currently building a new building. So we're going to be expanding because we're very busy, which
you
is very
are.
Nice.
That's exciting.
So that, I think, is going to be opening either late next year or the year after that.
It's coming. Yes. We can see the work going. And that's an exciting thing about Good Shepherd, is that it seems to be continually expanding. And that speaks very well for our healthcare system here in Hermiston.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There's definitely a very nice, big and growing group of doctors out there at the hospital.
Dr. Hadkin, we're so happy that you're here in our community now and that you came and did the show with us today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
And we want to thank you all for listening to this edition of Good Health. Nick Bayerano will be back first Thursday in January for the next program brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I hope that you have a great day. Angela Purcell signing off for AM 1360 KOHU. Have a great day.